News and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day where there's some pretty great news, at least on the fringes of today's consciousness. The news that we may be coming to a peak of Omicron infections, that the rates of infection, the rates of transmissibility may begin to go down soon. But, okay, that's good news. But the current daily rate of death from COVID-19 is 1,600 people every day. And that is profoundly alarming. We will be over a million dead sometime soon. And then, meanwhile, there are worries and jitters about the economy and about inflation. Crime is exploding. There's a piece that we haven't even covered yet that there are about 40 major cities that have all-time records for murder across the country, including cities like Louisville, Philadelphia, people know about. So what is the president focused on? He's focused on whether you can bring sandwiches and snacks to voters who are waiting in line in, is that Texas or Georgia? Josh Kroshauer will know. Josh Kroshauer is the National Journal's daily senior national political columnist, and he writes the weekly Against the Grain column. He has a new column with the headline, Biden's Agenda Disconnected from Voters' Everyday Reality. Josh, where do you think voting rights and election reform would actually rank in most people's priority of concerns?
If you look at the polls, it hardly registers at all, even among Democratic voters. When you ask them the economy, inflation, COVID, you know, the environment, crime, you list immigration, you list them all, and rarely do you see voting rights in the, you know, the top 10 issues of voters, even among Democrats. So this is something that is an issue the media likes to pay attention to. And, you know, some activists within the Democratic Party have really raised the level of concern over, you know, voting access in states like Georgia and Texas and others to a pitch, a fever pitch. It's kind of like the way Republicans talk about, you know, voter integrity and really, like, really gin up the troops without having a whole lot of evidence to point to serious misdeeds going on across the country.
Okay, so one of the things, your column's great, and it is hard-hitting. It seems to me unanswerable. You have a pretty good explanation, certainly as good as any that I've heard, of why the president's doing this. You agree he has virtually no chance of winning on this one. He's not going to get these bills through.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the obvious answer would be that he wants to make sure the base is engaged in the run-up to this year's midterm election. But the challenge, even on that front, is not only does he not have his own party behind him, because Kyrsten Sinema, Joe Manchin, and a few other Democratic senators aren't 100% on board with his strategy, but even the base, even the liberal base, Stacey Abrams, did not show up at Joe Biden's speech yesterday. Some of the leading civil rights activists on the left who have championed what Biden's been talking about didn't show up because they don't think he can deliver any. They're the right. He can't deliver on it because he doesn't have the votes in the Senate. So by bringing this up, not to mention at a time when there are a lot of other challenges on this president's plate, and to make this the signature issue in the new year, not just is hurting him with middle-of-the-road voters, but it also, because he can't accomplish his own promises, it's hurting him with the base as well.
And again, with the level of rhetoric, how does he acknowledge defeat, if that in fact is the very likely outcome here? I mean, when you're talking about your opponents now as Bull Connor and Jefferson Davis and George Wallace, I mean, where do you go from there?
Yeah, it seems like from the beginning of this administration, Biden has had some conversations with historians, journalists who partisan journalists who have said you can be FDR, you can be LBJ, even though he had a 50-50 Senate and a very narrow majority in the House. And he internalized those conversations. And as we actually learned just last night that author, journalist, and Biden supporter John Meacham encouraged him to write those lines, or at least the lines are very similar to his own lines about making a comparison to Bull Connor and Jefferson Davis and so on. It's not good politics. Comparing your own members of your own party to one of the worst arch segregationists of the 1960s is insulting, and it's historically illiterate. And Biden should know better. And I think even those in his own party are kind of raising some eyebrows about the not just partisan but just overreaching rhetoric in that speech that poisons the well to actually get anything done across the aisle. And really, just there are serious issues with vote counting and what happened after the 2020 election. But by mixing it up with partisan nonsense, it only cheapens the issue itself and makes it harder for anything of substance to get done.
Yeah, I saw a report, and you would know about it. I'm seeing Josh Kroshauer, who knows everything about what's going on in Washington, D.C., that Angus King has a very solid, reasonable, everybody-ought-to-support-it proposal about how to fix the Electoral Count Act so that we no longer have any confusion about a vice president being able to overturn the result of an election. By the way, I think Mike Pence would be a big supporter of Angus King's proposal, which says that before you can throw this to the House and the Senate, where you'd have to get a majority of the House and a majority of the Senate, right now the law says you can throw it into the House and the Senate with one senator and one member of the House. And part of what Angus King is talking about here, the senator from Maine, would be that you would have to get at least a third of the Senate or some much, much more substantial number so that there wouldn't be games played, which nobody really wants.
And it's not just Angus King is one of the leading senators involved in these conversations, but Susan Collins, the Republican senator from Maine, is involved in these conversations. Tom Tillis, who's from North Carolina, someone who's generally been supportive of Trump, just got reelected. He's involved in these conversations. If Biden decided to champion reforms and solutions to the issues he's talking, the actual serious issues that he talked about on January 6th, and he seems to want to get something done on, there's an opportunity there, but by demagoguing this issue, by stretching the facts, by making historically irresponsible analogies, he's only hurting himself politically and also making it harder to actually get constructive results done. But yeah, there's some very interesting low-level conversations taking place. They're being blessed, by the way, by Mitch McConnell. I'm not sure if he supports it, but he's certainly encouraging members of his Senate caucus to be involved in these discussions. So there really is, if Biden chose to go in a different direction and tried to work with some of the more moderate Republicans or pragmatic Republicans in the Senate caucus, there actually might be some real outcomes of success happening. But he's decided throughout his presidency to play to the base, to play to the progressive left, and he's got nothing in return for that.
Well, the one thing that John Meacham ought to give his pupil some schooling in is FDR's example with court packing. It was a ridiculous idea. It was a stupid idea. And even though FDR had an over two-thirds, nearly three-fourths majorities in both houses of Congress, he couldn't get it done. And later he apologized for it and dropped it and said, sometimes I'm my own worst enemy. And then Senator Kerr said, well, not as long as I'm alive, Mr. President. That court packing has also been dropped, one hopes. So let's hope you're wrong. Sorry. And that he doesn't continue to believe that he's the second coming of FDR. He's not. Can't be. Josh Kroshauer, we've put his column at our website at michaelmedved.com. Come join us again soon. We will. On the Michael Medved show, just was listening during the break to Dick Durbin, the senator from Illinois, one of the ranking Democrats in the Senate. I believe he's the majority whip under Chuck Schumer. And he had a perfect explanation for why the president has basically gone nuts on this issue of electoral reform, federalizing all the election rules. You know why there is so much upset about this and there's such a danger and we need to pass these bills because there's a danger to democracy? It's blame Trump. It's all about Trump. He says, oh, we've got a former president out there and he's a danger and he's trying to undermine our republic. And it's true, there are 19 states that have revised their election rules, but they didn't do it because Trump was griping about stop the steal. That's not the main reason. The main reason is we had virtually every state that altered its rules for election procedures because of COVID. And even though we certainly aren't done with COVID, not yet, but who knows, it could be hopeful. Even though we are not done with COVID yet, people wanted to get back to normal and to put together some procedures that were a little bit more cautious. And again, when you talk to people, I was talking to Juan Williams about this yesterday, and Juan Williams is a good guy. But he is bought into this entire Biden line that somehow if these laws don't pass, these Democratic laws taking over every state's election procedures, that if that doesn't happen, then democracy dies. I mean, it's dangerous and it's destructive to keep talking about democracy dying and things being so close to disaster and just barely surviving. I was speaking a little bit earlier about the Electoral Count Act and the procedure that we have and what actually happened on January 6th. What happened on January 6th was that they had people from the Senate and from the House, they had one each, at least, is what they needed. And that way they could refer the question about certifying the electors that the state legislatures had stolen, or had chosen. And, but it's still, in other words, yes, there were 137 members of the House, so a big chunk of the Republicans in the House, but it's nowhere near a majority. And you would need a majority to actually disqualify some of the electors who had been chosen. And they were nowhere near that. The worst thing that happened, and I think that what happened on January 6th was terrible, but it wasn't an insurrection. It wasn't close to the destruction of our democracy. Did all of the people have pure intentions on January 6th? No, I don't think so. But the idea that that has anything to do with this massive, sweeping, and radical left election law rewrite that Biden is insisting has to happen or the republic doesn't survive, it's appalling. Listen to what Joy Reid had to say with a guest on her show. Her show moved now to an evening slot, I believe. She slandered the Republicans because they're opposed to Biden on this voting issue. Listen to the intensity of this rhetoric and see if you think this is going to persuade people. Clip three.
What they were trying out just on black and brown people, they have now decided to run the tables on the whole nation. So everyone needs to wake up. People say to me, what are you going to do next? I say, what are you going to do? What are That's you right. going to do? Because at this point, it's all hands on deck.
Because if they're coming for us, they always start with black folks, and then they're going to come for the rest of you. That is the way it works. They want authoritarian control. They don't want the vote at all. And I think y'all need to wake up to that.
They don't want the vote at all. They don't want people to vote. We just had an election that set all-time records for participation. We had the highest percentage participation of any election since 1908. That was in 2020. And for black people, too. How can someone go on a major network, and I think, MSNBC is almost a major network. How can you go on a network like that and say that the Republicans are coming for you too, they don't want you to vote, and not be prepared to give some kind of an apology? If anybody out there, by the way, believes that's true, that Republicans don't want the other side to vote, they want to stop people, particularly people of color. If you believe that's true, explain it to me. Why would you have that belief? How would you support it? 1-800-955-1776. There's another anchor at MSNBC, Stephanie Ruhle, who is very frustrated, and she at least recognizes that Joe Biden is not going to win on this issue. Listen.
Administration wants to drum up this speech, talk about all the influential people who are going to be there. It doesn't matter if Joe Biden brings Steve Jobs, Jesus, and Marilyn Monroe. If he cannot get Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema on board, things aren't going to move.
Yeah, it's not going to change.
Okay, and you see, this is one of the points that Josh Krauschauer made in his piece, is that the one thing that people are saying, well, Joe Biden has a chance of revving up his base for all those people in his base who believe that there actually is a plot out there to take away their right to vote. But actually what you do when you do that and you don't deliver a change and you lose is you get them much less likely to vote. The turnout is going to go down. And maybe instead of losing 20 or 30 House seats, which is more than enough to give Republicans control, they could be looking at another 50-seat blowout like the one that they had in the first midterm election of Obama and the one they had at the first midterm election of Bill Clinton. The 1994 Republicans gained 55 seats. In 2010, the Republicans gained 63. If it's anything like that, it changes history. We'll get to another bit of encouraging news coming up on The Medved Show.
Your daily dose of debate.
Give me more.
The Michael Medved Show. 1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show. That's 1-800-955-1776.
On the Michael Medved Show, Dana Bash over at CNN had an observation that's worth talking about Stacey Abrams. When Joe Biden writes a speech, or John Meacham may have helped him write the speech, or in any event, there's this speech, and he's saying stuff that should be music to Stacey Abrams' ears, and she is likely to be the Democratic nominee for governor of Georgia. She came close to winning last time in 2018, but she doesn't show up. By the way, he spoke at the University Center, which is a university center for a number of historically black colleges and universities, Spelman University and Morehouse, which was the alma mater of Dr. King. And a number of the students all very clean cut and wholesome looking and just great people, I am sure, in the very much in the Morehouse tradition, are sitting behind Biden. They look like they're in a hostage video. I mean, with the masks, and I don't think they were enjoying the speech that much. There was not a great deal of excitement. There was some polite applause. This is Dana Bash on CNN about Stacey Abrams snubbing Biden's speech. Listen.
Dana, do you buy the idea that Stacey Abrams had a scheduling problem?
Well, never mind what I think. Democrats I talk to in and around Biden world don't buy it. Not for a second. And the president was maybe being polite, maybe trying to defuse a pretty bad situation when he said that, when he was going out to the helicopter today. But this is an intra-democratic fight that is so not needed and so unnecessary.
Yeah, what intra-democratic fight really is necessary right now? I mean, things are very strange. This is Chuck Schumer. He appeared this morning. He appeared on MSNBC on Morning Joe and told Joe Scarborough that the Democrats kind of understand that the political situation they're in is extremely tight, unpleasant, worrisome, and perhaps catastrophic. Listen, this is clip one.
But just about every senator, every single one of the 50, is talking individually to Joe Manchin, to Kyrsten Sinema. And they're saying things like, I'll lose my election if the legislature is allowed to do this in my state. We'll lose our majority, but more importantly, we'll lose our democracy. And those speakers yesterday that I mentioned were very powerful. So we're having constant discussions. Last night, for 2.5 hours, 9 senators of disparate ideologies and regions met with Senator Sinema. As soon as I finish this interview, and 9 of us are meeting with Manchin. We're having constant discussions, and we're exploring ways. They are against eliminating the filibuster. Many in our caucus are for it, but even those who are not are for changes in the rule, not for eliminating it totally. Even those who are not for eliminating it totally are for changes in the rules that allow us to pass voting rights. And we're actively discussing potential changes in the rules that hopefully can get all 50 of us there. Do I want to delude people and think it's easy or almost there? No, it's an uphill fight, but we're constantly at it. Manchin and Sinema are still talking to us, all of us, on a very regular, intense basis. And we're going to keep fighting and pushing in hopes that we can get this done. It's too important to drop.
And he's even set a time limit. The time limit is January 17th. That is Chuck Schumer. And that has to do with the observance of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. The entire attempt to put this forward as a profound civil rights issue is just ridiculous. And it's absurd. It's that with this entire focus on their bill, it's part of why they're stymied with the Build Back Better Act, which is going nowhere at the moment. And this one, which is another one of those sweeping, you have to explain and explain and explain because there's so many clauses to this bill to replace all of the individual state bills that have been adopted all over the country and to take federal control. And, hey, what about federal control concerning our federal debt crisis? The Fed's Jerome Powell, who's just been reappointed, I think he still has to be confirmed, he actually was questioned by Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana on Capitol Hill about the debt crisis, which is also important, maybe even more important long term. This is clip six. This is what the head of the Federal Reserve had to say. Listen.
At what point, how much is too much? At what point, in your judgment, are we going to hit the point where you have to say, no, that's it. We can't do anymore. It's hurting the world. It's hurting our country.
So we don't know when that is. And as the world's reserve currency, demand for our paper is very strong. If you had shown that and then asked somebody 15 years ago to predict what interest rates would be, they wouldn't be predicting that the 10-year would be at 175.
No.
Right? So there'd been a lot of demand.
But they would have predicted that the debt was going to go up.
They would have looked at that picture and said, well, you must be experiencing difficulty borrowing, but we're not at all. So, no, we're on an unsustainable path. Debt is not at an unsustainable level, but the path is unsustainable, meaning it's growing faster than the economy, meaningfully faster than the economy. We have to address that over time. We will address it over time. And the better way to do it is soon and to do it in good times. Start when the economy is strong and the taxes are rolling in. And that's you know, since we don't do fiscal policy, but I will say that the sustainability of the debt is something we need to get back to and focus on again.
Okay, yeah, focus on again. But as the debt builds, it builds on itself. There's so much going on. And of course, one of the things that has been at least put aside for a moment because of the focus on the Build Back Better bill, the budget-busting Biden Build Back Better bill, because of the focus on that and now on the electoral reform issue, I don't even want to say voting rights issue, we've lost track of the education issues and some of the cultural issues that are really fundamental for the country and but are being picked up across the country in various states. And Republicans are giving an indication that this could be the year of school choice. And states from Arizona to Iowa to Nebraska, a real focus on education. And one of the reasons the school choice is more relevant than ever before is because there are a lot of parents, and I would certainly be one of them, in my case being a grandparent, focus on the idea that critical race theory, which is a polite way of saying America bashing, because that's what it is. It says that America is entirely based upon systemic racism. The best way to deal with that challenge is not to outlaw an idea or to outlaw an approach. It's to give parents some control over where they send their kids to school. We will get to that and more. Hillary Clinton for president in 2024. A leading moderate says, yeah, we'll get to that and much more on the Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, when it comes to education issues, this is a season for state of the state addresses. It usually, governors of states don't wait till January 20th when a new president is inaugurated. Very often it's right after New Year's, the governor's inaugurated, and right after that the governor will deliver a state of the state address. So you get a sense of what's going on around the country with some Republican governors, some outstanding Republican governors. One of them is Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa. And she is running for re-election, as I understand it. And in her state of the straight state address, she made a big pitch for parental control of children's education. And not teachers' union control, but parental control, and particularly in favor of the ultimate form of parental control, which is called school choice. The idea that we all pay taxes for education, and the fact that you ought to be able to pay that money that you are entitled to use for your kid's education for whatever school you want to use. You're not supporting a business here. You're supporting an educated populace and educated members of your family. Here is what Governor Reynolds had to say in her State of the State address, clip 14.
So to the parents who are listening tonight, who are frustrated with what's happening, know that I and members of this legislature have heard you loud and clear. Enough is enough. Parents matter, and we're making sure that you stay in charge of your child's education.
And then she continued to explain the idea behind school choice. Clip 17.
As I said last year, school choice isn't a zero-sum game. It has the potential to raise the quality of all schools. After we expanded open enrollment last session, one superintendent responded by setting the goal of making his school district, quote, the destination of choice. And that is precisely what we want for every school, public or private, to strive to be the best it can be. Because when our schools succeed, Iowa becomes a destination of choice for parents everywhere.
And by the way, Iowa has always, and for reasons that are complicated, but it's always had a pretty good public school system statewide, one of the better and more effective ones. And of course, giving parents the choice of where to send your children introduces that element of competition that could improve the education level in that state all the more. Doug Ducey, the governor of Arizona, is also been an outstanding leader, outstanding governor, and he has come out with a very strong endorsement of the principle of school choice, of educational choice, and in his State of the State address, and it sounded like this. This is clip 18.
50 plus years ago, politicians stood in the schoolhouse door and wouldn't let minorities in. Today, union-backed politicians stand in the schoolhouse door and won't let minorities out. Many of our poor kids and children of color are trapped in a failing school. It's time to set these families free.
And a bold plan for school reform and for more educational choice in Arizona. And then there's a state senator in Nebraska where they have only a unicameral legislature. They only have one house of the legislature in Nebraska. But State Senator Justin Wayne, who's a Democrat, called out his colleagues. Now, officially, they're not supposed to be, because it is a unicameral legislature, not supposed to be Republican or Democrats, but he bears a D after his name, and he called out his colleagues for sending their own kids to exclusive private schools while they want to block school choice for others. Clip 15.
I'm going to start off with this simple thing that we've talked about this a year ago, and a year ago I challenged everybody in here that if you would send one of your family members to a school, a neighborhood school in my district, or Senator McKinney's district, I would change how I feel about this bill, and we can go through the struggles together. Just curious if anybody did that. Anybody move their kid to Senator McKinney's neighborhood schools or my neighborhood schools so we can go through the transformational that you keep telling my community to wait for together? Okay. So nobody did that. But your kids did go to private school.
Okay, his community that he's referring to is the black community in Omaha. And he continued forcefully and I think very effectively. Listen to Senator Justin Wayne of Nebraska.
So if you got the urge today to stand up and defend public education system for the black and brown students, that is the white savior complex. That is the nice racism. They have more than elected people who are capable of defending them. In fact, Senator McKinney and I represent about 70% of African Americans in this state. And no, not all African Americans agree on this topic. But by and large, statistically, you cannot say that public education is doing us a service when you talk about the number of suspensions in Omaha public schools, when you talk about the achievement gap that over the last 12 years for black students have increased, not decreased, although funding has increased. You're not going to be, when you get that urge to stand up and defend my community and the poor and brown and black people in my community, that's the savior complex. That's the nice racism that we're speaking about.
And I do not know if there was an effective response. It's tough to draft an effective response to in a state like Nebraska, where, again, you have somebody on the Democratic side of things, somebody who is a leader in the African-American community, speaking up for what should be a major, major issue as we get closer to this election. And here's one more story, and it's a story having to do with educational diversity. And so if we can have an introduction to a Michael Medved multicultural moment, please.
Can you paint with all the colors of
love? And now, a celebration of diversity in action. It's time for Toleration.
Listen, what the flower people say.
Tranquility.
Imagine all the people.
And harmony.
Living life in peace.
Here is a Michael Medved multicultural moment.
And it's from St. Louis, Missouri, and Washington University in St. Louis. And a headline in one of the student newspapers, evict white frat boys and give their homes to historically marginalized. Student leaders at Washington University want school officials to evict the disproportionately wealthy and white men in campus fraternities and to give their buildings to historically marginalized groups. A writing in Student Life for himself and almost 50 leaders of WashU student organization, student union president Ranan Miao, that's the name, whines that while campus fraternities have a total of 9 houses on campus, underrepresented organizations have but 3. Miao is a triple major in political science, sociology, and women, gender, and sexuality studies. He contends that fraternities have done nothing to earn the space they occupy. Instead, they want Washington University to terminate their housing contracts with fraternities and publicly commit to reallocating the fraternity houses to spaces for Black, Latinx, Asian, Indigenous, MENA, low-income, international, LGBTQIA, female Muslim, and differently abled students. I believe that in most campuses, fraternities own their houses, but never mind that in this greatest nation on God's green earth.